This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
WS Braves, crashing into me, D-Century, and Coconut Counties, X marks the spot of the dial to be, creating a new connection, WGXC.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Zach Wilkes of Spencertown, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by The Highway Drive-In, a four-screen drive-in movie theater in Coxsackie, New York. Information and schedule at HIWAYDriveIn.com.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio.
This is Wave Farm Radio Program Director Meredith Cooey, and you're about to hear an interview I recorded with Kyle Marshall, the Artistic Director of Dance Company Kyle Marshall Choreography. This weekend, the company is performing its new work, Feminine, at PS21. Since its inception in 2014, Kyle Marshall Choreography has performed at venues including Chelsea Factory, BAM Next Wave Festival, Jacob's Pillow Inside Out, Actors Fund Arts Center, New Jersey Performing Arts Center, Little Island, and Roulette. So thank you, Kyle Marshall, for being here with me on Zoom today to talk about your new work.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask about the about section, like how you describe your company. So you describe your dance company, Kyle Marshall Choreography, as a, quote, a company that sees the dancing body as a container of history, an igniter of social reform, and a site of celebration. Kyle Marshall Choreography believes in the creation, sharing, and teaching of dance as a way to deepen our knowledge of who we are as individuals, how we develop relationships, and ultimately societies. I really love the way those statements recognize the ways in which our bodies become embodied, how their physicality is shaped and contoured by the way we live in, and how our embodiment holds so much potential for making an impact. So can you talk a bit about your company in general, how you understand dance in the body, and how you arrived at this understanding?
Yeah, well, I'm really grateful for being here and getting a chance to talk about our work. Kyle Marcy Choreography started in 2014, and it started as a kind of a close-knit community of people, predominantly of color and predominantly queer. And that's kind of how the origin of the company got started. And I was making a lot of work that was thinking about history. I'm a bit of a history nerd, and always curious about how events affect our bodies and also how we are kind of moved by them, or we move them ourselves. So some early work I made was thinking about urban planning, for example, and how we move through cities and how our bodies feel as we move through those cities, and how design, architectural design, spatial design allows us or makes us or forces us to move in grids or lines, choosing how we see each other or don't see each other. And all of that is shaped by the architecture and the space. So with my more current work, I'm very curious about the ways that we show up in community, the ways that we show up within our expressions of gender, the ways we express ourselves in our expression of our own identity around race and identity, and how that folds into the choreography. And so that kind of brings me into Eastman and thinking about his joy, the music that he sits with, and also the kind of radical experimentation that he was working with minimalism at during his time. And so that kind of gets wrapped into the body. And for me, I'm often curious about how the history shows up. How do we hold history? How do we remember history? But also how do we, through our work, through our actions, create a shift, create a space for people to consider something else, or to consider a person that they wouldn't necessarily, or a life experience that is not their own. And I think that dance is an opportunity for us to gather. It's an opportunity for us to witness and also to feel through some moments or ideas that might be challenging, might be thrilling, might not be ours, might be someone else's we know. And I think that it's a great way for us to kind of show up physically and also celebrate life, celebrate our time together, celebrate the ways that art and dancing can move us. And to me, those are really exciting things to play with and work with.
I notice in myself when I am watching, witnessing a dance performance, sometimes I feel that my body's actually moving, even though it's not moving. Mm. It wants to move the way that the people dancing are moving. Mm-hmm. And that was a really interesting experience once where I saw my leg raising once, like, you did. So I think it's, yeah, I really love what you're saying about how even audience, right, our bodies are moved by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a kinesthetic sensitivity that we get. You know, we feel it when we watch football and we cringe when they get tackled. We have an empathy when we drive past a car accident and all of our heads turn to see the action. And we feel it in a dance concert or in a club where we're bouncing to the beat or feeling through the music or what someone's doing. And you can feel that connection to people and to the music. And I think that's a wonderfully innate way of witnessing and experiencing dance. It doesn't have to be about getting everything, but it can really just be about how your body is experiencing and moving through something.
What is your process with the choreography? How do you approach your choreography through this lens and understanding of dance?
We've been building kind of a trilogy of work around Julius Eastman. So Feminine is kind of the cornerstone and the kind of beacon that kind of is driving all of these works forward. I do a lot of research as I'm building work, especially initially. I do a lot of reading. I'll try and watch films from a certain time period or around a certain subject, documentaries. I'm very influenced by visual art. And so all of that kind of thinking and academic research, I've discovered shifts my body. So reading something kind of informs a way of moving, or researching Julius Eastman's interest in disco, which was the pop music of his time period, got me really curious about the repetitious rhythm of disco, which feels really connected to minimalism, which was the avant-garde music of that time period. And also just thinking about how that all sat within the same city, New York City. And so that for me gives me a sense of groove, a sense of rhythm, a sense of research into what was a pop dance of that time, or what would feel like an accessible movement. And that gets combined in the studio through improvisation, through listening to the music and finding and building phrases, through figuring out the texture of the piece. And then I bring in the dancers. We're working with five amazing dancers with this production. And I'm also one of the dancers, so it's a cast of six. And so I bring them in, and then we do more improvisation and figure out the language together. I teach them the phrases. We combine things. We discover new things in the process in the studio that maybe I don't have as much information in, but some of them do, because they come from a wide range of dance experiences. And so there's certain moments. There's a moment that gets featured with the heels that is very much like a part of a few of the dancers' experiences, Jose and Niarz and Khalid. And so I didn't realize that until we were in the process. And so that was a moment that kind of came out as an expression. And then the production elements start to get involved. My husband is the creative director, Ido Tastic, and so he does the hair, makeup, and costume design, and is very much with me through the beginnings, kind of imagining what is the visual world of the piece. And so we get the production in, and then we kind of are just getting an opportunity then to just share it with the audience. We have then people come to watch it, we get feedback, we get energy from that experience, and things shift. But to me, it's a very a lived-in experience. It really doesn't manifest until people are in the room. But there's a lot of research I do initially, a lot of movement research and academic research to kind of give myself a sense of where this piece is and where it's going.
So this work, Feminine, was partially developed while in residence at PS21.
Yep.
And it's described as a celebration of Black and Brown LGBTQ plus people and artistry in times of resilience and solidarity. Can you describe, well, you've already described some, but can you describe this work more specifically and how you developed it?
Yeah. You know, I think that this work, especially Eastman's work in general, you know, he was a Black gay minimalist composer. And I fell in love with his music at first because I hadn't heard of any Black minimalists. And it wasn't through kind of discovering his music that I discovered the scope of what he was doing. And so this work is very much driven by the music. It will be performed live, but with Black Box Ensemble. And so the music's themes and the melodies and the textures really create the world. It's a very joyful piece. We are kind of exploring, yes, the Black and Brown experience, yes, the LGBTQ experience. And so there's moments of joy, there's moments of exhilaration, there's moments of sorrow or isolation. And all of that is kind of weaved together with this really beautiful music. I do explore certain subjects around identity, around politics. I'm not afraid to explore them in my work. And I think it's important for us to kind of experience that within art. We can talk about it all we want, but sometimes hearing it and feeling it and seeing it is a different thing than trying to analyze something or talk through something. So I love that in this process, there is this openness and sensitivity that the dancers are working with, and also that the themes don't feel like they kind of charge through what's happening. It feels like you are just witnessing people interacting with each other, and all of the layers of politics, all the layers of identity and all that stuff come through the dancing together, come through the interactions together. And to me, that feels like a really satisfying place to meditate in for about an hour and 10 minutes. There's large ebbs of musicality. There's kind of more abstract moments. The movement vocabulary is very flowy and easeful. I have a history dancing with the Trisha Brown dance company. And so there's kind of a sense of release and ease with some of the movement that's happening. And then there's moments of kind of pop, flashy moments, sections that feel a little bit more referencing ballet and connections to that kind of uprightness and posing the body. My husband and the creative director, Ito, did a wonderful job with some of the costumes. And there's these kind of ornate robes and additional like chiffon accessories that we add. And there's fans that get added in. So there's moments that have like a runway scene or something that feels very fashionable, almost like someone getting dressed up, you know, in their closet or something like that. And so there's something that's very lived in and alive with some of these sections. And then there's some more surprises. There's some more surprising accessories and other elements, which you'll have to see the show to kind of get a sense of what that is.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see that.
Yeah.
I want to talk a bit more about the political nature, and you said you're not worried about going there. I've been reading a few books recently about the role of arts in what one museum professional and scholar calls societal collapse and crisis. And I'm wondering about how you see this work within that climate and what you hope for it. What you hope for the work.
I think we can't ignore the times that we're in, regardless of where we are in the political spectrum. I feel like we're all in a place of deep frustration and concern and fear of what's happening next. And that fear, that concern, is something that Black and Brown folks have experienced in this country a long time. That fear, that uncertainty, is something that LGBTQ people and queer people have experienced in this country a long time. It is not unfamiliar. And I think that for some folks, these feelings might be new, but I think for a lot of folks in my community, this is what we've lived through. This is what our parents have lived through. It's, you know, it's been an ongoing thing. Things have changed. Things have gotten better. But I think I've realized that progress is not necessarily guaranteed. I think I was a little naive in thinking that we were always arcing forward. And I think that it's still a push to make change happen, to make a shift happen, to move through these challenging moments. So I think the arts are an opportunity for us to explore, to imagine, to think of what could be possible. It's a space to introduce ideas that can be challenging or controversial. It is a space to learn. It is a space to experience someone else's journey, someone else's experience, and to be a witness to that and to learn from that. It's an opportunity to, especially with the performing arts, to be in a room of people that might not be like you. And I think that we need to build more spaces where we're in maybe community, maybe just sharing space with people that are not, that don't share all of our identities. I think we need to have spaces where we are connected in similar identities. And I think we need to be in spaces where we're not, because I think we've been really polarized with how we're consuming media and just all of the other dynamics that are going on in this country. And I don't think our experience is polar. I don't think it's binary. I don't think it's conservative, liberal, or, you know, Midwest, East, West Coast, or male, female, or Black, white. That is not the fullness of all of our experiences. And so I think art making, and that's what I talk about in the mission, that making dance, but also sharing dance, is an opportunity for us to deepen who we are. It's an opportunity for us to learn. It's an opportunity for us to see someone else on stage that doesn't look like us and to realize they have an experience that we can learn from. We can learn from a lot of people's experiences if we realize that difference is not a fear. So for me in making this work, it's an opportunity for us to show up as a community. It's an opportunity to maybe explore what is an idealistic or optimistic community? What are the ways that we might touch or connect or see each other in the space that we can create through choreography, that we can then see an example of, that we can then replicate out in the world? It's an opportunity maybe for respite or to have a moment to just kind of decompress. We're not completely abandoning the dynamics of the world, but we are giving ourselves space to kind of move through it a little bit differently. You know, we have to also make this change, this journey feel good. We have to want to change this country. We have to want to change our communities. And sometimes we can't do that if we are in a negative headspace, if we think that everything is inevitable and we're just kind of nihilistic. I think art can give us space to see other options. And I'm really curious about cultivating that in the space that I'm making my work in with my team. And also when we're sharing the work in community, communities that are like us, communities that are not like us. And I think that the more that we kind of piece through that and work through that and ask questions and are not afraid to not know and not afraid to be vulnerable as people, I think the faster things can shift and the more accountability can be created within these larger systems.
Thank you for that. That was really great. And it's making me think, also, I wanted to ask more about Julius Eastman and mm-hmm. the decision to make work with his work. And so, as you said, he was a minimalist composer, but I was reading about how he calls his work organic music. And mm-hmm. I was listening to Feminine, and it seems like such a great example of that, of this motif, and then it transforms and it shifts and it changes and it moves mm-hmm. and does all these things. And yeah. I was, you know, looking at his life a little bit, and you mentioned that you didn't know that there were Black minimalist composers. And so I'm wondering about the story of his life and how maybe that's doing some of what you're discussing with your work too, of making these compositions and these experiences of beauty and joy, and also getting at all of these other political realities in terms mm-hmm. of like how he was defined or not defined and compared to, and, you know, getting you know, aligned with either, you know, the Academy or, mm-hmm. you know, not the Academy, and that sort of being not in one camp or the other, but doing yeah. something wholly his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Eastman was very much ahead of his time. He was, he was born in New York, but grew up in upstate. So he spent a lot of his time as a young child in Ithaca and then also in Buffalo. He was a classically trained Curtis Institute pianist. He was a 5-octave range vocalist. He was also a composer, a conductor, a musician. And, you know, we have words for that now, which is interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary artists. You know, we have now like Prince, who played all the instruments and can compose and all of that stuff. But in the 70s, that was unusual. It was not normal for someone to be able to sing 5 octaves and play classical music and do all of that. You know, Nina Simone didn't get into the Curtis Institute. And that kind of was like the base of her fight in as she was performing her work in the cabarets and on, you know, on stages. Eastman got that opportunity. He also got the opportunity to be a part of the Creative Associates out in Buffalo, which was a very experimental avant-garde music program where he had a full professorship and he had a house and he had a job and a salary and all of that stuff. And he chose to let that go and move to New York and focus on his creativity, to focus on his work full time. He was you know, born during the Civil Rights Movement. He came of age during Stonewall. He moved to New York shortly after that. And I think he was really energized by the city. He was a very eccentric person. He was known for his kind of outlandish outfits, his very theatrical way of speaking. He was known for the titles of his pieces of music, which were very controversial and brought up race, brought up class, brought up, you know, his queerness and his expression of his sexuality. And all of that was very controversial in a time period in art where we were almost avoiding subject, avoiding the politics, you know, that started to come back during the AIDS crisis and Bill T. Jones and ACT UP and all of the kind of intersections happening. But he was really doing that in the 70s. And so I was really fascinated by him and also his intersection with all the different spaces he worked in. He worked with the avant-garde artists. He was peers with Brian Eno and Philip Glass. He, you know, he was also working with Arthur Russell in a disco band. His brother is a jazz musician, so he's inspired by jazz. And so I think when we have an expectation of minimalism, some people might roll their eyes or like try and close their ears. But I think with Eastman, what he did with that was that, okay, he has a theme. You're going to hear it. It's going to repeat. But we're also going to play around it. We're also going to improvise around it. We're also going to add in other elements and other sonic ideas so that it starts to be played with and kind of it feels alive. I think his way of his term organic music is a structural idea. But I think what happens is that the music doesn't feel robotic. It doesn't feel like it's trying to be a machine. It feels like it's trying to be alive. It feels like, you know, the minimalism of a bee going about their day, going from plant to plant. Yes, they're doing the same thing. Yes, it's the same action, but where they're going and what's happening gets alivened by the action, by the act of trying to do it again and again. And so I think that there's a very openness to his music that I think was really challenging, especially for the more classical trained musicians. I'm really excited to be working with Black Box Ensemble and to hear their version of the piece. It's just such a special treat to be doing this with live music.
So if people want to attend this Friday and this Saturday at 8 p.m. at PS21, how do they find info and get tickets?
You can check out PS21's website. I think it's ps21chatham.org. And there you have, you know, there's photos and more information and all that stuff. And you can also check out the company's website, KM Choreo. That's KMCHOREO. And that's our website where you can, again, get connected to the performance at Chatham, but also just see the company and just stay connected.
Great. And is there anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, we're really grateful to be coming up to the Hudson Valley. And this is an area that we've been building relationships with. We've had some performances in Hudson and Catskill, a little bit more for the South in Westchester County. And we've been up in Albany. So it's just such a treat to be here and to be in nature. You know, I think it's just we're really grateful. So I'm really happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and I look forward to seeing the performance.
Thank you so much. See you there.
You just heard an interview with Kyle Marshall, the artistic director of dance company Kyle Marshall Choreography. The company is performing its new work titled Feminine this weekend on Friday and Saturday at PS21 in Chatham.